Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back, 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me today. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride is here, too, because we always have a lot of fun when Joan's here. She always brings her very informed but often acerbic self to visit with us. Joan, it's good to have you here.
Almost always acerbic, I would say.
Well, I was trying to play nice, Joan.
No, that's all right.
Joan, by the way, today is President George Washington's birthday.
Oh, today is the official birthday. Oh,
275 years.
Oh, wow.
How about that?
Wow.
This is also the day that that the Washington Monument was officially dedicated in 1885.
Oh.
And you know about the two colors of the monument, right, Joan?
I don't remember. I probably did it one time.
Well, you know that
the
monument is made of two different colors of stone.
Okay, well, I probably did, but forgot.
But well, the lower half is darker than the upper half, and
okay.
But it's not really two different colors of stone. That's the high water mark. Hello?
Well, yeah, I'm waiting to hear what you mean.
That's the joke. Haven't you ever? Nobody's ever said
no.
That. Oh, yeah, that's a wonderful joke.
Oh.
You get somebody who's never been to Washington, you show them the monument, you say, "See the line there? That's the high water mark."
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, right. Sometimes jokes are just lost on you, Joan.
Yeah, sometimes. Or sometimes they're just not funny.
Well, maybe so. That could be the case. Also, this is the day on 1819 when Spain ceded Florida to the United States. They just gave it to us.
Well, that was nice of them.
1819. Wasn't that nice of them?
Why would they do something like that?
We should send them a nice flower arrangement or something today for that.
Yeah.
Joan, the lead story in the Kiplinger letter this week is about about employment.
Yeah.
And the whole first page is all about employment in the United States. And where's the rub, Joan? Where's the challenge? What's the interesting thing about all this?
Well, you mean in terms of the situation worsening?
Well, where is it? I mean, one thing you point out is that there are a lot of auto industry jobs being cut. We all know
right now
that Chrysler's in trouble, right?
Yes.
I mean Daimler Chrysler, the Mercedes-Benz folks bought Chrysler, what, 6 or 7 or 8 years ago?
Yes, and
like
they feel like they've got a pig in a poke.
Well, and don't you think that a lot of people told them that? I mean, I could have told them that back then. I never understood
even
that.
Even I could have told them that.
I know nothing
about it.
I know. I never understood that purchase in those days anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're saying, you know, to me it was sort of like the AOL Time Warner thing.
Right.
But, you know, even I could have told them that wasn't going to work. But, you know, with Chrysler now in trouble, Ford is, you know, probably would, in my opinion, would have taken bankruptcy last year if they hadn't been able to borrow a few billion dollars in junk bonds, basically. Chrysler, I mean, GM would be bankrupt right now probably if they didn't have so much cash.
Right.
In terms of almost all of their operating models are bankrupt. Whether they're officially in bankruptcy, their operating models are bankrupt.
Jeez.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
unfortunately, yes.
So we've already lost a lot of auto industry jobs. You guys point that out in the letter this week.
Right. But I think what we were trying to say was that this isn't just the auto industry, that it's just across the board, that skilled workers are at a premium in so many different industries, and that's the problem.
But yet we have these auto workers who are largely in the Midwest, right? Most of these laid off auto workers,
yeah.
And
right.
The ones that are probably going to be laid off over the next 2 or 3 years, there's probably going to be quite a bit of that going on. We have those guys who are supposedly skilled people. That the challenge is moving those people from the 20th century U.S. auto industry to the 21st century jobs.
Right, it's a big mismatch right now.
Right. People, we've got square pegs and round holes, right?
Exactly.
So what are we going to do about it?
Well, you know, it's not going to be easy, but we're saying that employers have to be creative and aggressive. And you know, and of course it involves a lot of retraining, but that's not easy as well because you still have to match people on a geographic basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly. I mean, people who are, if you're in Dearborn, Michigan, and you're a tool and die maker, and your job is going away at Ford or wherever, or Chrysler or whatever it may be, or a supplier to one of those companies that's no longer doing business with that company, and there's a tool and die maker that needs somebody in Iowa or in New Mexico, you know, people are not going to want to uproot and move down there.
Exactly. And that's what you're faced with right now.
Yeah. So, Joan, the thing, though, this is, to me, this is just a continuation of what we saw in 03 and 04. Remember the jobless recovery that everybody thought was such a horrible, mean thing? It was obviously something somebody did. We should be mad about this. Remember that? The jobless
recovery? No, I didn't know that.
You don't remember the politicians coming out and trying to skewer whoever they could for the jobless recovery? There must be something. Businesses must be doing something wrong. The Republicans must be. It's all a reordering of what's going on, and largely, Joan, because of the advent of technology.
Well, and that's one of the problems here that we're pointing out, that, you know, in a lot of cases, kids are not attracted to what they consider not non-sexy jobs. But if you look even something, for example, like a garage mechanic, you're not just a grease monkey anymore. You have to know a lot about computers, and a lot of this is high-tech stuff now.
I have a friend who is a highly skilled auto mechanic at a dealer, at an auto dealer, mm-hmm. and he basically almost doesn't get his hands dirty anymore.
Gee.
I mean, he's able to do his work, the work that he does to keep these things going without having to, you know, be, as you say, a grease monkey. And,
yeah.
You know, it happens. It's out there. And you know, I don't know if I ever told you this or not, but I spoke to the manager of a plant manager of a paper mill a while back. And I asked him how many of his employees use technology in the direct performance of their job. Without the technology, they couldn't do their job. And you know what he said?
What?
100%.
Wow.
So, you know, I can imagine, I'm imagining how people working in a paper mill, the jobs for those jobs would be different today than they would have been, say, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So, stand by. We're going to talk about this more. We got more to sort out here with our good friend Joan Pride right after these messages. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. 20 after. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. Pretty darn good Van Halen music there, huh, Joan?
Yeah, I like Van Halen. Hey, you know, they're touring again. They're going to be touring.
I heard about that, yeah.
Yes, with David Lee Roth.
Well, I know. That's when they were the best, I think. And so they made nice. So they made up.
Apparently, yeah. I can't believe it.
I know. Well, if you and I can get along, Joan, anybody can get along.
Right.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate and your host. And, Joan, we're talking to folks about the Kiplinger letter this week, which is the lead story is about what about all we're going to do with all these jobs that are going wanting, with all these workers that are going that need a job. And Joan, a lot of this has been solved. I want to come back to what I said a minute ago about the jobless recovery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people were upset because the economy is doing so great in 04 through 03 and 04, and it was really the latest expansion basically began around in 02. And so a lot of people were complaining about that. But the truth is what happened is we have a 21st century economy with a whole generation or two of people with 20th century skills.
That's right.
Who know how to do things
That
were done in the 20th century. And Joan, as I tell the audiences when I go out and speak to people, I remind them of something Dorothy said to her dog. You're not in Kansas anymore, Toto.
That's right. Boy, yeah.
It's the 21st century, and things here are different. And I also like to remind them of something else, Joan, that I think is pertinent to this topic today. A recent study that I saw, a year or so ago, of the industrialized nations, including, you know, China and India and these emerging countries, the country that lost the most manufacturing jobs in the period that was studied, which was, say, the last 5 or 6 years,
right,
was China.
Oh.
They lost like 11% of their manufacturing jobs, as I remember.
Like
an unbelievable number, like 15 million jobs. I mean, it's a ridiculous number of jobs they lost because of technology. China was the number one loser of manufacturing jobs in that period because of technology.
I'm amazed, yeah.
Well, see, so that my point is, remember that paper
mill. Although I guess they had farther to go to improve in their factories and elsewhere.
Bingo, that's exactly right.
Thank you.
So that paper mill I was talking about with the 400 with the employees who do all of their work with technology, 400 employees. But 10 years ago, that paper mill took 800 employees.
So
we have different kinds of jobs, different kinds of skills.
Right.
But, Joan, the part of the problem, though, and you guys point this out, as we've continued to train people to do those jobs, there are still the manual jobs that need to be done in America.
Exactly. That's right.
The home improvements,
mm-hmm.
the auto parts, the bricklaying. And you guys have a comment about that in here.
Plumbing and carpentry, too.
Electricians and things like that.
Right.
Those are jobs that we need to be training people for. And the truth is, Joan, those are well-paying jobs.
Believe me, I know that, having recently paid plumbers and electricians and folks like that. Yeah.
You know the old joke, don't you, about the plumber who was working on the attorney's house?
Oh, no, I'm afraid to ask.
Oh, yeah, and the attorney was watching him work, and he said, he gave him his bill, and he said, wow. The attorney said, wow. He said, this is more per hour than I make as an attorney. And the plumber said, I know, it's more than I made when I was an attorney. But Joan, what we've got to, one of the things that everybody I talk to keeps coming back to, all the people, and I'm doing quite a bit of work now with entrepreneurial educators out there across the country, and they're really surfacing as an emerging part of the education system, Joan. And one of the things that everybody seems to be very concerned about is that our education system is not part of the solution in terms of preparing our young people for, and I'm talking about all the way through college,
right,
not preparing our young people for the 21st century. What do you think?
Wow. What you're saying is that these entrepreneurial educators would help to, I guess, turn that around.
Well, they would. They are.
Yeah.
They are, in fact, because what they're doing is they're helping these young people to have the mindset of an entrepreneur. And one of the things I talk to them about is everybody in the 21st century, Joan, has to be an entrepreneur. The only difference is some will risk their capital in the pursuit of their goals, and some entrepreneurs will risk other people's capital, meaning there'll be entrepreneurial employees.
Entrepreneurial employees. That's an interesting concept.
Well, it's something I've been talking about for several years now.
Mm-hmm.
When I started talking about the 21st century being the century of the entrepreneur, I determined then that we couldn't do it without entrepreneurial employees.
I think it's hard to have an entrepreneurial employee, though, because as an employee, you don't have the incentive to shine that you would as a true entrepreneur.
In entrepreneurial organizations, you do.
Oh.
You got to have that.
Okay.
But see, that's the definition of a 21st century company.
That's the new paradigm, yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah. If you have a 20th century company, those people are not going to be able to be entrepreneurial. And guess what, Joan?
What?
They're not going to be with you for very long.
There you go. Right.
21st century companies, folks, guess what? We're not in that century anymore. If you're a 20th century company, you're a Tyrannosaurus Rex. You seen any of those lately? 29 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blasingame.
You still got to try.
That's right.
Do it no matter what.
You've reached Pierce Incorporated. For Matt Pierce in sales, press 1. For Matt Pierce in accounting, press 1.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with us. Thanks for staying with us. We appreciate it very much. Joan Pride is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And we're talking about the labor situation in America and the disconnect that we have and it's somewhat dysfunctional labor situation, Joan, because actually, if you looked at it from 30,000 feet, you'd think it was pretty dysfunctional because you'd say, okay, we got all these people. Well, here's a fact. If you polled 100 random small business owners,
yeah,
from all walks of small business, and you said, what is the single biggest challenge you have right now? They wouldn't say sales. They wouldn't say access to capital. They wouldn't say inflation. They wouldn't say taxes. They wouldn't even say health care, all of which over the last 10 or 20 years they would have said at some point in time.
Yeah.
Today, every one of them, let me put it this way, nine out of 10 of them would say finding the right people for the jobs that I have.
Right, and not just finding people. I think the word you said was critical, finding the right people.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
We don't need to take a pulse. We need the right person.
Exactly.
And so that's exactly what's going on. But the problem is the right person may be 700 miles away.
Yes.
And
the people that are right around you don't have the right skills.
Right. And then, Joan, you throw it. You know, we can't have this conversation about the jobs that are going wanting, especially the manual jobs, the bricklaying, the field work and all that sort of thing.
Right.
You can't have those kinds of conversations. A lot of the construction jobs,
mm-hmm,
skilled construction jobs, you can't have that conversation without talking about the immigration challenge we have.
Oh, boy, no question about that.
Because the illegal immigrants are doing a lot of that work, aren't they?
They sure are. A lot of very good work.
Now, let me say this, Joan, to be fair and to be correct. When you drive by a construction site and you see people who are Hispanic working,
yes,
on a construction job, you know, we don't need to go around assuming that all those people are illegal, because they're not. But
that's right.
But there is a lot of that going on.
Yes.
And so that's one of is it possible that internally, Joan, within our borders, that that's the biggest challenge that America has today is the immigration situation?
Well, it's certainly one of the toughest challenges because it also even makes for some strange political bedfellows.
Mm-hmm. It sure does. Yeah, when you got Ted Kennedy and George Bush agreeing with each other, that wigs me out every time, Joan. When those two guys start getting together. Another thing, Joan, move over to page 2 and talk.
Okay.
Let's talk about what the Federal Reserve, the comments that they've made. You say that there's no all clear coming from the Federal Reserve on inflation, and I want you to talk to us about what you mean here, and I'm going to tie this back to the education thing. Go ahead.
Well, the Federal Reserve, I think there was some hope that maybe we could see some light at the end of the tunnel in terms of the Fed maybe beginning to think about lowering interest rates. But because the Fed is still worried about inflation, and we had some inflation numbers earlier this week. I think the CPI rose 0.2% for the previous month. So the Fed is still watching inflation, so it's not convinced that it can lower rates.
Well, Joan, one of the reasons why I'm not worried about inflation, you know, regardless of the spike that they had, is because in recent surveys, small business owners were complaining about profits. Now, if small businesses are complaining about profits, meaning they're not where they would like for them to be, which really means that they're down a little bit from where they were, say, a year ago,
yes.
It doesn't mean that they're not profitable. It just means that they wish they were making more. That tells me that they're bumping up against the supply and demand thing, the what the market will bear thing, which tells me that's good news for inflation.
You would think.
Remember when we had all the pricing power we could eat a couple of years ago for small businesses, and they were making lots of profit, and inflation was going up? I mean, this is a correction.
Yeah.
This is a correction, Joan, isn't
it? Yeah. Oh, no, I have no question about
it. It's just a correction.
Yeah.
But now, another thing, Joan, that you got to blend into the Fed's issue here of inflation is what's known as non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment, NARU.
Ooh, say that five times fast.
Exactly. But what this is, folks, this is the thing that the Fed watches to see if they want to raise rates. And I want to comment on this, Joan, when we come back after these messages. Folks, this is big. In my opinion, this is a watershed moment for you and me in terms of how much we're going to pay for the money we borrow. And we'll talk about that with Joan Pride right after these messages. 20 till. Stay with us.
You're going to want me for your girl.
Welcome back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Joan Pride is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she is their website is kiplinger.com, which I encourage you to check out, and don't forget to subscribe to their publications, which includes the flagship document that we work off of every week, the Kiplinger Letter, which has been around since 1923. Joan is not quite a founding employee there.
Thank you.
But also, that's the weekly. And then they have the three biweeklies, the California Letter, the Tax Letter, and the Agriculture Letter, supporting those wonderful people out there that I admire so much, our farmers. And then we've got the magazine, Joan.
That's right. You can buy it on the newsstand. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Exactly. Or you can subscribe to it. They'll send it to you once a month.
And sure, we'd love to.
I bet there's a phone number, too, Joan.
I bet there is. It's our toll-free number, 800-544-0155.
Operators, as they say, Joan,
are standing by.
Tell them that I sent you, folks. And then
and see what happens. See if they don't hang up on
after
you.
After they hang up, then call back and don't tell them that. Joan, I want to get back to this thing about inflation and what the Fed's thinking and my comment on non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment. Joan, do you remember back in the late 90s when you started working with me, I kept saying the Fed needs a new model. The Fed needs a new model. Do you remember me saying things like they don't believe their own eyes?
Well, they weren't believing the productivity numbers and other numbers that they were seeing.
Bingo. They couldn't believe.
And they were thinking with 20th century brains, I guess.
And Phillips curve mentality.
Oh.
The Phillips curve mentality. The Phillips curve basically says, folks, in plain English, which is the only way I can understand it, that basically that if the lower the inflation, the lower the unemployment, then therefore the higher the inflation rate.
Right.
And what they were seeing was frightening them, Joan, in the late 90s. They were seeing incredible, like 4-point-something% unemployment, which was very, in fact, most economists were saying this is full employment.
Yeah.
And it was freaking out the Fed. They said, and of course, the Fed, as you know, Joan, they have to be way out in front of everything.
And they expected inflation to spike, and it didn't.
It didn't. And folks, that's the main reason. Because they didn't believe their own eyes. And we kept saying, guys, believe it. This is the this is the new century we're emerging into. Because of that, they raised rates 12 times in a row, basically contributed to the crash, in my opinion, of the NASDAQ, which was overinflated. There's no question it needed a correction anyway. But basically sent us into that little recession.
Yeah, but those are the guys we pay to bring us in for soft landings, not to
That's exactly right. But it was because they needed a new model. They didn't have it. And this NARU thing, folks, I wish I'd known about it at the time. I would have given that a name instead of saying they needed new models. But this NARU, right now, recently, Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Fed, said that they are thinking that NARU, they've got to take a different look at NARU.
Now, do you think they're taking a different look and looking at Nehru because they have a new Fed chairman who's open to this?
I think if they look back and they now say, I don't think it's so much Ben as it is this just the benefit of hindsight. But the point is, here's my point, folks. The money that you and I are spending when we borrow money at the bank, I think we're not going to have the kind of run up in the of interest rates just because our economy is doing well, just because our the unemployment is going low, and this is good news for you and me. I think the Fed is not going to overreact like they did in 1999 and 2000.
I see, right.
And so that's good news. They finally have a new perspective on these models they're looking at, and this is going to be good news for small business. I mean, let me tell you something. With 2.2% inflation right now, that's not too darn bad, Joan.
No, I'll take it.
But I'm telling you, if they were still looking at Nehru the way they did in 99, with 2.2% inflation even, but with unemployment at 4.5%, we'd be paying 10% for interest right now.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I believe it.
So this is good news for you and me, folks, for small business owners. Joan, let's move on down and talk about some human resources information.
Sure.
Go ahead. You got that down there.
Well, this is interesting. This is something that Congress is going to do to help small businesses. Often small businesses use what they call employee leasing firms, which are a big help because they take a lot of the back office functions.
Now, this is not, pardon me, Joan, this is not to say staffing, folks.
No.
A leasing firm is not a staffing firm.
No, I didn't say that.
Some people get confused sometimes when you say, okay, go ahead.
Well, the point here is that one of the questions has always been, who pays the employment taxes?
Right.
What if your employee leasing firm, who's supposed to be handling all this stuff for you, takes the money and runs? Are you liable?
Right.
The IRS would say yes, and small business owners and by and large, employee leasing firms are excellent, helpful firms, but you get a few bad apples in there that ruins things for everybody. So now what Congress is going to require IRS to do is set up a sort of a bonding and certification process so that if you, the small business person, are looking for an employee leasing firm and you find one that is bonded and certified by the IRS, you know that if anything goes wrong, you are not liable for the employment taxes if the employee leasing firm screws up. But because you've gotten one that's bonded and certified, you know they're not going to.
Well, and there are approximately 2,000. The new term for these folks, at least the more professional ones, Joan, are professional employer organizations.
That's right. And if you were to look in the legislation, that's the term they would use. They would not use the term employee leasing.
Right, but that's an old term. Leasing is an old term, and it really doesn't even fit the title. But the PEOs, folks, there are a couple of thousand of them across the country. Some of them are really, really good. In fact, in the interest of full disclosure, one of our sponsors, Administaff, is a PEO. Tintel, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Don't you need somebody to love? Wouldn't you love somebody to love? You better find somebody to love.
Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Lassingame. We're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, the thing about this PEO issue with who pays the taxes and all that, that's just a matter of making sure you do business with a company that's well-capitalized and it's been around for a while.
That's right. But I think it's important that small business owners get this help from the IRS to point them in the right direction.
Well, that's right. But and Joan, the thing is,
there's a lot to lose here in terms of back taxes.
There's exposure there. But see, this is the same kind of a due diligence process you go through when you extend credit to someone.
That's true.
I mean, you could get upside down a lot more than what the employment tax is with a company that you deliver a bunch of goods and services to, and they go out of business. They go bankrupt. They stiff you for the money. You know, you could owe $5,000 in back taxes and have a company get upside down with you for $50,000. A customer, I should say.
But that's the difference here is we're talking taxes and we're talking the IRS. If the IRS is going to point the finger at you and make you pay penalties and other things,
that's right.
You need to have the IRS say, okay, we agree with you that this is a good company and that you're not liable any longer.
Well, but and I hear you. But the point I'm trying to make is use the same kinds of decision-making process to find a good PEO, which by the way, folks. I've been doing this for probably 15 years, Joan. Mm-hmm. I've used these kinds of companies for 15 years. It's a wonderful, wonderful way to do business. You get a lot of stuff off of you. Just find the right company.
Right.
That's what you got to do. Joan, let's move over and talk about you want to talk about this little Y2K thing?
Sure.
That's kind of interesting. Quickly, I want to get to the small business tax stuff, too, quickly.
Okay. Well, very quickly, daylight savings time is coming earlier this year than ever before because of some legislation passed by Congress. Yeah, I'm excited. It's coming on March 11th. But guess what? Everybody's computers aren't properly programmed to deal with that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because they weren't ready for it. Because this was a law that was put into place 2 years ago, and those computers were programmed years ago.
But the good news is that software vendors are sending out changes, so you'll be able to upgrade your software to handle that.
What's going to be the big deal, though, Joan?
What do you mean, what's going to be the big
deal?
Well,
you're going to be off an hour for a while? Is that what, for 3 weeks,
time-sensitive functions are vulnerable. You know, time clock, scheduling software, auction deadlines, security programs.
Well, see, for example, my BlackBerry changes time zones. Whenever I move around, it changes time zones. Yeah. It'll change your daylight savings times probably.
Mm-hmm.
So I may be off an hour with my BlackBerry for 3 weeks until it catches back up.
See?
So just pay attention to that, folks. Joan, let's move on down. With the imminent passage of a minimum wage increase, which you'll be glad to know I'm not going to get on my soapbox.
Since we only have a few seconds,
right? The Congress, in their stupidity, in my opinion, in their lack of really understanding how the economy works, has tried to bundle some tax advantages into all that.
So you think these are stupid?
I think they're offensive to me.
Okay, well, let me go through them. Let me go through these stupid things very quickly. The higher first-time expensing level of this year is $112,000. That would continue through 2010. They're also planning to extend the work opportunity credit that lets you take a credit for hiring disadvantaged folks. And they would also let companies at a higher revenue plateau elect to use the cash accounting method so they don't have to use the accrual method.
Right. That's a good thing. But see, Joan, here's my point. Those things, we either already had them or they should have already been done.
If they're so good, why didn't they do them already?
Don't act like you're giving me something that's wonderful because you should have already done this. I shouldn't have to pay through the nose for a minimum wage increase to get this. This makes sense.
I hope you're not a Scrooge on Christmas morning when you get your presents.
Sometimes I am.
I think so.
No, this is in my opinion, this is another blatant example of our government, our members of Congress, admitting basically to the world, you know what, we don't really know how the economy works, but we're going to do this political thing anyway, and I don't know,
Amazingly, it's bipartisan this time.
I know. And that's the reason why, Joan, you don't hear me say Republican and Democrat much anymore.
That's right.
I only talk about the 110th Congress.
10th Congress.
I lump them all together. They're pretty much alike. There are a few up there who I consider to be leaders. I had Congressman Steve Chabot and Senator Mike Enzi on recently, and get it. Both of those guys get it. And if we had more guys like that, small business would be better.
But the minority seem to get it now, I guess. The minority of members get it now.
That's exactly right. Yeah. But most of them don't. Hey, Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
Okay, I'll be there.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame, senior editor with the Small Business Advocate Show. And I will see you later. But before I go, let me remind you, always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.